Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This week, the state of Ohio could resume a busy schedule of executions, but a judge last week ruled that the next in line is not competent to be put to death. Right now, 146 inmates reside on death row in the Buckeye State, but the pace of death penalty referrals by some county prosecutors has slowed in recent years and has virtually disappeared as a crime-fighting tool in Franklin County. In December, journalist and author Andrew Welsh Huggins, a legal affairs reporter for the Associated Press, wrote an article for Columbus Monthly. It was entitled, "The Death of the Death Sentence, How Evolving Public Opinion and a New Law Have Changed the Landscape in Ohio." Welsh Huggins is the author of No Winners Here Tonight, Race, Politics, and Geography in one of the country's busiest death penalty states. We welcome him back to the show. Welcome back, Andrew.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
For our listeners, if the death penalty is found not to be meted out proportionately among the counties, if you are more likely to face the death penalty in Hamilton County, for example, than in Franklin County for the same crime, should the law be changed? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Andrew Welsh Huggins, you cite three factors that have brought about the change in the number of referrals for the death penalty in Ohio, but this isn't across the board. This is just in some counties.
I'd say it's in most counties.
Okay.
If we just step back, the death penalty was reenacted in Ohio in 1981. In 1996, the first major change was made where juries for the first time could consider life with no possibility of parole. So that began a process of a reduction in death sentences. Beginning in 2005, there was an additional law which allowed prosecutors for the first time to seek that life without parole, and that's a true life in prison. There's no chance of getting out. But they never had to put the death penalty on the table at all. And that was very appealing to prosecutors who were looking for ways to deal with these particularly heinous crimes. But these death penalty cases are tough on everybody. They're tough on counties. They're tough on counties' budgets. And many times the victims, the family members of the people who were killed, they don't particularly want to go through a death penalty situation either. They just want this perpetrator behind bars and be done with it and have some closure. And so I'd say those are the main factors that are leading to this reduction, that the law has changed to allow prosecutors to focus, you know, truly on the worst of the worst, as they're called. And but yet at the same time, they have the next harshest punishment available in a much easier fashion than they used to.
My guest is Andrew Welsh Huggins. He is a legal affairs reporter for the Associated Press. He's also the author of a book about the death penalty in Ohio. If you have a question or comment for him, want to talk about the death penalty with us today, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Public opinion, has it stabilized? Is it still changing in respect to the death penalty?
I'd say in Ohio, as across the country, the majority of people, when they're polled, still support the death penalty. I'm not aware that that support has gone down necessarily that much. And typically with those polls, the first question involves, you know, do you support the death penalty for a particular type of crime? The majority of people still do. The next question, how do you feel about life without parole as an alternative? That tends to show that there's also strong support for life without parole. So, I don't want to be misleading about the polls. The majority of people still, when asked, support the death penalty, but there's also very strong support for life without parole. So you have to dig down in these polls a little bit.
The state of Connecticut, though, just abolished the death penalty there. And there are states that are all across the country that are looking at that very closely.
There are a number of states recently that have abolished the death penalty. Another one, New Jersey. And New Mexico not that long ago. Colorado actually came pretty close with an interesting proposal to divert all money spent on capital punishment to homicide investigations to close unsolved crimes. But the one thing you have to keep in mind with the states that are abolishing the death penalty, Connecticut, New Jersey, these are not what you would call active death penalty states. These are states, I think Connecticut I think, did execute one individual in the last 10 years, but New Jersey had not executed anyone in 40 years. So while there are states that are abolishing the death penalty, again, you have to put those in a separate category of states like Ohio and Texas and Oklahoma, which have active death penalty laws, active death chambers. And so that's why I don't think you'll see opponents of the death penalty who are trying to get it abolished. I don't think you'll see traction for that in Ohio for quite a while.
One of the issues is whether or not the death penalty is meted out proportionately between the 88 counties in Ohio. Is that a concern? And cost is often the issue. A less populous, less wealthy county has got to pay the same, pretty much the same bill when it comes to a death penalty specification as any county does. They just don't have the same resources. Is that the case in other states around the country? Are they finding the same kind of problem?
That's always been the case with the death penalty, and that's probably one of the number one arguments against it, that it's handed out disproportionately according to both the state but also down to the county level. We are in this country, we have a locally controlled system of criminal justice, and that starts with an elected prosecutor. An elected prosecutor in a county sets the agenda for how his or her office is going to handle these cases. And the classic examples in Ohio would be Hamilton County, which is a conservative county in southwest Ohio. They have the most number of – they've put the most number of people on death row. They're able to prosecute death sentence the most successfully. On the other end of the spectrum is Cuyahoga County, which similar size area but has relatively few inmates on death row. It's traditionally been very difficult to get a death sentence in Cuyahoga County. There is one twist which I'll mention with Cuyahoga County, which I wrote about recently, which is for decades they have they still indict more death penalty cases than any county in Ohio and probably across the country. And it's a little unclear why they do that. They get very few of those result in death sentences, and that can be kind of costly for Cuyahoga County. But in short, it's what you've said is exactly right, that where you are indicted and tried in Ohio as well as across the country depends entirely on where you live, the approach of the prosecutor, and obviously the nature of the jury the feelings of the jury towards the death penalty.
What about the tactic of using the death penalty as a bargaining tool, and could that come into play in Cuyahoga County?
Well, Prosecutor Bill Mason adamantly denies that that's the case, but other prosecutors have suggested that it is and that that's an unethical approach. I think we can probably safely say that the death penalty has been used as a bargaining chip in Cuyahoga County and other counties over the years. When it's placed before a defendant, it's often put there for them to provide information, to force a plea bargain that would come with testimony against other defendants. And I think prosecutors who are in favor of the death penalty would tell you that that's an inappropriate use of the law, that it's unfair to use the ultimate penalty as a bargaining chip. And there have been cases where people have ended up on death row after refusing plea bargains. John Ely, who is scheduled to be executed next month, was offered very generous deals, and he just turned them down. He refused to implicate a conspirator, and you know, now he's facing a death sentence next month. In a situation where I think it's pretty clear that was used as a bargaining chip.
And it means that some defendants end up on death row for charges that would be minor or less serious in other places.
Yeah, that's right. John Ely, now that's a relatively old case out of Youngstown, and I think 1986. But the man who prosecuted him, and from the former Mahoning County prosecutor from the 1980s, is supporting Ely's bid for clemency for that very reason. He says, you know, not, and these are his words, not to make light of what happened in that case, but this was a situation where a convenience store robbery went bad. During the robbery, the store owner was shot and killed. And I think his point is that is a very different situation than a predator or a multiple killing or something which was clearly set out to be a murder from the beginning. And his point is, yeah, that, again, not to make light of the murder, but this was probably different than what lawmakers envisioned when they put the death penalty forward.
Governor Kasich stayed the execution of Abdul Akwal 2 weeks ago to have the courts examine him for mental competency. Could you talk about that case? Because on Friday, a Cuyahoga County judge said he was not mentally competent to be executed, and the judge said it's up to the defense to seek a delay. Can you catch us up to date on this and talk about that case a little bit?
Yeah, so Abdul Akwal shot and killed his estranged wife and brother-in-law in a Cleveland courthouse basement 20 years ago, pretty high-profile slaying, obviously, taking place in a courthouse. Over the years, he was originally found incompetent to be tried. Ultimately, he was treated and tried and sentenced to be executed. His mental illness has been an issue over the years. He claims all kinds of conspiracy theories involving his involvement with the CIA and President Bush and lots of things like that. Recently, he has begun arguing that the CIA is orchestrating his execution. And a judge had to weigh basically one issue. The experts on both sides that testified before Judge Friedman in Cuyahoga County, everybody agrees that Akwal has had some pretty serious mental illness in the past. But where they disagree is whether where this idea of the CIA orchestrating his execution is coming from. And the government's expert comes down to the fact that basically they believe Akwal is malingering, which is legalese for lying and making it up. The judge ultimately came down on the side that that Akwal sincerely believes this, that he can't, you know, Friedman ruled that Akwal understands that what he did, understands that he was sentenced to death, but he can't make the connection about his execution. He still believes the CIA is doing that.
He doesn't know why. He doesn't make the connection about why he was sentenced to death.
What he hasn't made the connection with is he believes he is going to be executed, and if the CIA were to step in, he would be spared. So Governor Kasich, who did deny Akwal clemency, then went ahead and gave him a 2-week reprieve so this issue could be worked out in Judge Friedman's courtroom. So where we stand now is the judge has ruled him incompetent to be executed. The Cuyahoga County has appealed that. There's a related request before the Ohio Supreme Court. His execution is scheduled for this Wednesday, and I think we're just going to see a lot of flurry in the courts over the next 2 days. I have to be honest, even I'm a little unclear on the legal standing of his case right now. It is, I think, possible he could still be executed on Wednesday, or we could see more delays.
A special task force has been asked to examine how the death penalty is meted out in Ohio. Can you tell us a little bit about that? That was established, last September they announced it, and they put it together in November. It launched in November officially. What's going on with that now?
This is a task force convened by Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor. And basically she put it in place with the idea that we've had a capital punishment law for 30 years. Let's take a look at it. What can be improved, fixed, changed in the law? She's been clear from the outset that this task force is not to look at having the death penalty or not. It's not on the table. They've met, I believe, 3 times. There's several subcommittees looking at all sorts of issues. One of them is this idea of proportionality that we talked about. And she, I think, has already acknowledged that her initial time frame of having their work done in a year might have been a little generous. So they're probably going to continue to work into 2013. It is clear from their deliberations and the documents that are floating around that there are definitely 2 camps, that there's prosecutors and other supporters of the death penalty with particular positions that they don't want to bend on, and opponents are pretty firm in their positions. It's a little unclear to me what exactly is going to come out of this. I mean, there may be some more protections for defendants. There has been an idea floated that some other states have at least looked at, which is to create a sort of a statewide panel that would handle death penalty indictments. And this would be an attempt to get away from what we talked about earlier, the disproportionate outcomes by county.
The cost would be assumed by the state then?
Not just the cost, but the there would be a panel convened at the state level which would determine whether a case would go forward as a death penalty case. And that's how it's done in the federal system.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, there are prosecutors who oppose that, but there's also prosecutors who think there might be some value in that. For one thing, it would take the decision-making out of their hands. On the other hand, as I said before, we're a local control state. We elect, you know, local counties elect their prosecutors, and there's plenty of prosecutors who are not going to be willing to cede that to a state panel.
My guest is Andrew Walsh Huggins, a legal affairs writer for the Associated Press. We're going to continue our conversation on the issue of the death penalty in the state of Ohio with two members of that task force, Ohio Supreme Court Justice Paul Pfeiffer and also Hamilton County Prosecutor Joe Dieters. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, Todd Akin stays in the race for the U.S. Senate. Wildfires burn on. Isaac heads toward the Republican convention. Our weekly news roundtable goes behind the headlines. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point is this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. 77 degrees, sunshine, and warming up to a high of 91 today. Clear skies tonight, a low of 63, more sunshine, and a hot day with a high of 92 on Saturday. Sunny and a high of 90 degrees on Sunday. And All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
A special task force has been asked to examine how the death penalty is meted out in Ohio and whether changes are needed to make sure it's done so fairly. Joining us now is one member of that task force, Hamilton County Prosecutor Joe Dieters, a longtime advocate of the death penalty. Hamilton County has sent the most inmates to Ohio's death row, 61 over the last 30 years. And we welcome you to the show, Joe Dieters.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
And correction, of course, Ohio Supreme Court Justice Paul Pfeiffer is not on the task force. I apologize for that. Justice Pfeiffer, former state senator and known by some as the father of the death penalty in Ohio, he since reversed his stance on the issue and now opposes the death penalty as it is administered these days. Welcome to the show, Justice Pfeiffer.
Good morning, Ann, Joe, and Andrew.
And, of course, still with us, yes, of course, Andrew Walsh Huggins is also with us, a legal affairs writer for the Associated Press. Well, let's talk about some of those issues. We were a little earlier. You're not both on the task force, but let's talk about some of the issues that the task force is looking at. Whether the standard of proof in death penalty cases should be beyond all doubt instead of beyond a reasonable doubt. That was something that was issued to the task force at the outset last November. Has that become an issue of conversation or not? Joe Dieters?
Not really. I mean, I think the major issue that the panel, at least in terms of discussion time, has taken up was the difference in counties and who seeks the death penalty and who doesn't, who's successful and who's not. Obvious death penalty cases that the death penalty isn't sought, and what can be done to be more consistent in the charging process. That has been a majority, I think, of the scope of the argument.
So from where you sit as a known, you know, you're a supporter of the death penalty, your record speaks for itself. What are your, do you have any concerns along those lines? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, make no doubt about this. The people who want to change the death penalty want to end the death penalty, and they'll try to do it through a different varying means, and the current cause du jour is that we have different results from different counties. But I caught the end of what Andrew was saying, and he's absolutely correct. We are a county-based state. People elect the prosecutors that they want elected. If they want a prosecutor who doesn't seek the death penalty, doesn't enforce that law, that is their option. I remember Bob Horowitz in Stark County, and I had a discussion before his death, and Bob said, I will never seek the death penalty. And he made it publicly known that people of Stark County voted overwhelmingly to support Bob as prosecutor. I have chosen to enforce this law, and I think the people of my county know that. And if they don't want me to enforce the law, if they want a prosecutor who won't do that, then they can elect somebody else. The problem is the argument, if depending on what county you're in, that you may get the death penalty more likely than not, is that once that occurs, the argument's going to be, well, if you commit a murder in Massachusetts, you can not get the death penalty, but in Ohio you will. And then the argument would be, well, if you murder somebody in America, you might get the death penalty than if you murdered someone in Great Britain. So where do we draw the line? And thus far, under our Constitution, it's drawn county by county, and the people have a right to elect who they want to elect. Statistically speaking, we may have the most on death row, but we are very, very selective compared to the other counties in terms of seeking it, and we're very successful at it when we do.
Justice Pfeiffer, has that always been the case, or has this been mostly since the death penalty was reinstituted on your watch, as far as the disproportionate problem?
You know, I really don't know the history going back, which predates me. I was in the General Assembly, a new House member in 1971, the first time the legislature responded to the U.S. Supreme Court striking the death penalty. And so at that time, anybody who had been on death row was not in it. So the quick answer is, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree that Joe is correct that different approaches in different counties, and while Hamilton County has the most people on death row, I also respect his approach, and that is not to indict everything that could be swept into the death penalty possibility. That again is one of my objections. It's I think it's really an abuse of the statute to use it as a plea bargain tool. That is to indict anything that you could possibly squeeze into a death penalty with the view of getting them. That's the incentive to get people to plea, and that's apparently what goes on in some counties. So in terms of Hamilton County, I don't know whether they're unfortunate to have some of the most heinous of murders committed, because I really don't recall one from Hamilton County that I've seen since I've been on the court in the last 20 years that I would say, gee, this is a stretch to make this a death penalty case. Where I have seen that from some other counties, and one of my objections there is, when we reenacted the death penalty, it was in response to the Supreme Court twice striking Ohio statute because it was overly broad. So we tried to narrowly tailor it to the worst of the worst. And in some counties, I'm seeing cases in which they shoehorn in a specification that is questionable, in my view, in order to make it death eligible. Kidnapping being the most obvious. When we enacted the statute, we included killing police officers, killing prison guards, multiple killings, killing to escape detection, and then the most controversial among opponents was the felony murder statute. And that is, you know, killing in the course of a robbery, a killing after a kidnapping. And as I indicated, the kidnapping is the one where I see what to me are really questionable cases. So to me, a kidnapping is when you take somebody hostage. A lot of times it's for the purpose of sexual gratification, those kinds of things. But we're seeing cases in which the kidnapping as such is, to me, it's really not a kidnapping. It may qualify under the plain language, the statute, mm-hmm. but the purpose was always to kill the person in domestic situations. And I think there was just a high-profile one that just finished down in one of the southeastern counties where a guy and his mother and father supposedly took his ex-wife or estranged wife.
Down in Logan. Dumped
her in a septic tank.
Right.
I don't know the record in that, but I seriously doubt the kidnapping anything to do with that. They meant the murder. And so that would ordinarily not be a death case. That's what the jury decided in that case. But so that's one of the issues to me.
My guest, you're listening to Ohio Supreme Court Justice Paul Pfeiffer, also with us, Andrew Welsh Huggins, legal affairs writer for the Associated Press, and Joe Dieters, Hamilton County prosecutor. Andrew Welsh Huggins?
Justice, I'm wondering what you think of the, putting aside this Hawking County case that you just mentioned, would you agree with the statement that you're seeing far fewer of these, what you call shoehorn cases, now than you used to? I mean, a lot of the cases you're referring to are what we'd consider old cases from the 80s and early 90s. Do you think that the implementation of life without parole and all that has led to,
Absolutely. And that has also led me to reevaluate my position on this. At the time, in 1981, when we enacted this statute, in the Senate version, when it cleared the Senate, we had life without possibility of parole as an option. And that was always one of the, when we didn't have the death penalty due to the U.S. Supreme Court striking it twice, one of the great objections was that you had life sentence with parole eligibility after 30 years, after 20 years, and after 20 years, which meant that people could get out fairly quickly. And so we included life without possibility of parole, and Representative Terry Tranter in the House took it out, and in the conference committee, Representative Tranter was the lead House representative. He was chairman of the House Judiciary Committee at the time. And he simply said when we got to conference committee that he thought life in prison without possibility of parole was more cruel than the death sentence. I don't know how you respond to that. That was a statement for which there is no comeback. So we gave up on that. But after I left the legislature, I urged others to consider life without possibility of parole. And at some point in time, someone decided to offer a bill that made that change. And then the second change came a little later in which the jury didn't have to vote not to impose death. They could choose from the options mm-hmm. right from the start. And I think that is the cause for a dramatic drop-off in the number of juries that are imposing.
But I'm wondering, Justice, I'm wondering if you think that as a result of all these changes, I think there's an argument to be made that the imposition of capital punishment in Ohio today pretty closely resembles what you were looking for in 1981.
In terms of, are we finally to a point where it is applied or where prosecutors are. I can't speak for prosecutors because, as Joe indicates, the approach varies widely from one county to another, and particularly the urban counties, very different approaches. But in terms of the end result, the juries are finding far more selective because we've been a couple of years down to two or three death cases in the whole state in the last couple of years. That also, however, I think strengthens the argument that if we've dipped that low, then we probably ought to consider just getting rid of it.
I'm going to direct this email from John to you, Joe Dieters. Want to hear what you think about it. He says, one thing the death penalty is used for is to get leverage. I think it was used in that killing where the guy hid the bodies in a tree. They took the death penalty off the table and in return, he told them where the bodies were hidden. So even if the death penalty is not often used, it can have a purpose. As Hamilton County prosecutor, what do you think about that? That has been an issue that's been debated, is using it as leverage.
Is this the Knox County case you're referring to?
Yeah, yes. It's Matthew Hoffman killed three people, hid their remains in a hollowed-out tree in Knox County in November 2010.
I know that I called... Dennis Watkins from Trumbull County called the prosecutor and pledged whatever assets they needed to pursue the death statute in that case. And it was obvious that the prosecutor had already cut the deal with the defendant to find the bodies in exchange to take the death penalty off the table. I don't believe that the death penalty, that statute, should ever be used as leverage like that, leverage for a plea, especially for a plea. I think it is bordering on unethical for a prosecutor to seek a death indictment and then try to negotiate with the man's life or woman's life. Can you imagine the disproportionate negotiation posture they're in when, okay, you want to roll the dice and get the death penalty? I heard an astounding statistic from the state public defender during our first meeting. He told me in the last calendar year in Cuyahoga County, they had eight straight not guilty verdicts in a death penalty case, on death penalty cases. And to me, that is, something's just not right. I mean, the first thing we go through when we decide whether or not we're going to seek an indictment, the very first thing we ask, is there any proof issue at all, any problem with proof? Because our cases, and I think Paul would agree, he's reviewed many of them, almost invariably, the case centers around the penalty phase. The guilt, I just tried a serial killer, killed four women last year, and we had a full confession, we had DNA, we had everything. The last of his victims was a 13-year-old girl who was kidnapped as Paul would envision a kidnapping. She was raped and then strangled to death. The defense attorneys in that case, and I think in a very smart fashion, in opening statement said, hey, our guy did this. All right, we're here to ultimately argue the penalty. And by doing that, I think they get a great deal of credibility with the jury because they're not trying to pull a fast one on them and try to argue the guilt or not. But I guess my point is this. I can't even think of one single not guilty verdict in Hamilton County. Straight not guilty. And there must be people seeking indictments on cases where guilt is a real question. And I just think that, I think it's wrong to do. It may sound funny coming from a prosecutor, but I think our job is to do justice, not to win cases. And we only seek these in the worst of the worst. We had a guy last year who literally executed his girlfriend, his infant son. These are point blank bullets to the head, and a 3-year-old girl he's babysitting. That's the kind of, and we have overwhelming evidence. That's the kind of case we seek the death penalty for.
And you'll never do a plea agreement with that.
I will not. I will, and I've done it one time, where if a fact comes forward that we didn't know at the time of the indictment, I would have no hesitation to knock one down. But it just doesn't happen thus far.
We're talking about the death penalty. There is a special task force at work examining how the death penalty is meted out in Ohio and whether changes are needed to make sure it's done more fairly. My guest, you've just been listening to Joe Dieters. He's the Hamilton County prosecutor. Also with us, Ohio Supreme Court Justice Paul Pfeiffer and Andrew Welsh Huggins, legal affairs writer for the Associated Press. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Hey, did you hear car talk last week?
Can you tell where the leak is coming from?
I haven't looked too hard.
By that you mean you haven't opened the hood?
I have opened the hood to pour in
more to add more fluid, but you
How
haven't gone beyond that.
How often do you have
that?
To add it?
About every 20 minutes of driving.
Every problem may not have a solution.
But it's always worth a couple of laughs. Join us this week for Car Talk.
Car Talk tomorrow at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here in just about 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. It's All Sides Weekend with Classical 101 host Christopher Purdy and a discussion of Columbus Dance Theater, Broadway shows coming to Central Ohio, and the latest from Actors Theater. That's All Sides Weekend from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News. And it's 78 degrees, warming up to a high of 91 today. Clear skies tonight, a low of 63. More sunshine for Saturday, a high of 92. And sunny again on Sunday with a high of 90. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Talking about the death penalty as it is administered in Ohio with Andrew Welsh Huggins, legal affairs writer for the Associated Press. Also, Joe Dieters, Hamilton County prosecutor, and Ohio Supreme Court Justice Paul Pfeiffer. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513. I'm going to take a call from Mark in Hilliard right now. Hi, Mark. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. My question is to the entire panel. I was curious if there's a case either recent history or far past history where it is suspected that the state of Ohio got it wrong and they executed an innocent person. And if that were the case, if the state of Ohio did ever execute an innocent person, would that be the tipping point to do away with the death penalty once and for all? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay, Mark. Thank you. Andrew Welsh Huggins, anything we know about that?
Well, of the wherever we're at, I believe 46 inmates that have been put to death since 1999. There have been a couple that put forward an innocence claim, but I don't believe the evidence was particularly strong. Joe Dieters can talk about one case that he'll recall, John Byrd, who was, I believe, the third person put to death. John Byrd did argue that while he was present at the stabbing death of Monty Tewksbury, that somebody else actually stabbed him. He didn't disagree that he was part of that crime, but he said that one of his defendants was the one who actually did that. Now, that went back and forth for a while, and he lost that argument. And I'm not saying that John Byrd was innocent. I'm just that was the one case that comes to mind. There were a couple of individuals who came pretty close to execution before our new law. And then, of course, there's the case of probably the most famous case in Ohio recently was Dale Johnston, also from Hocking County, where this septic tank case was. Dale Johnston was on death row for several years for killing two individuals, and he was found to be completely innocent of those crimes, and two other people were ultimately convicted of those.
You know, Joe Dieters, I know you've worked hard to get the creation of a statewide DNA database. Are there concerns of yours ever about any of the cases? Had you had DNA or any DNA data that it might have changed the outcome?
if it would, we would act immediately to remedy the situation, but none have ever done that. In the John Byrd case, showing my age, I was actually sat through that entire trial as a law clerk in the prosecutor's office. And Byrd never raised actual innocence until the last second of his appeal in federal habeas. And it was the magistrate just tore the state public defender up because they had prepared affidavits which contradicted each other factually. It was clear that they were making misrepresentations to the court. It was, frankly, something lawyers should never do. So if we have the ability to get DNA, we're always going to look for it. I tried a case in the mid-90s. I'm sure Paul remembers it was Jeffrey Wogenstahl. He kidnapped and murdered a 10-year-old girl out of her bed. Another kidnapping judge, that was a real kidnapping.
Right.
And he claimed he didn't do it. We had tons of evidence against him. He had cleaned out his car with a pressure washer the night after Amber went missing, and it was about 20 below zero when he was doing this. Literally had all four doors open, power washing out the inside of his car. They found inside of his car a tiny speck of blood on the back door handle that they removed with a cotton thread. And back then, we didn't have DNA sophisticated enough to say if it was Amber's blood or not. All we could say it was under a blood typing test called DQ alpha that it was consistent with her blood. And we were very careful in argument that we couldn't say it was her blood, but it was just another little piece of the puzzle if they wanted to give it anyway. About 3 years ago, Wogenstahl, because he's getting on his last leg, decided I better have this blood tested. And now they can test it. And it came back as Amber's blood. And we don't have any objection to DNA. The last thing I would ever want to, I don't care if it's a misdemeanor case. I don't want an innocent person ever convicted. And if we ever find out that a mistake was made, we will be the first ones to act to remedy the situation.
Justice Pfeiffer, are you confident that what's gone before you in the Supreme Court and before, that there's never been any mistakes?
Yeah, to say there's never been any mistakes is asking me to stipulate to too much. I can say of the cases that have, and a number of the people who are near to execution right now were convicted and their case went through the Supreme Court in the early days of the statute before I was on the court. So some of these defendants that are coming up now to be executed, I really have never seen their case. But in the almost 20 years now that I've been on the court, Joe is correct. The lion's share of the cases that we see in argument at the Supreme Court level is not about whether or not they were the perpetrator. It is about whether or not they had a clean trial without any important legal issues that might require a reversal and a retrial. There are a few exceptions to that, and there's one troubling thing that the court did in the early years. Craig Wright and I both opposed that. Perhaps Moyer did too. In the early going, there was another hurdle that the court had used, and that was residual doubt. That is, even though it appeared beyond reasonable doubt that there was still a thread of residual doubt. A number of years ago, the court formally rejected that as a test that the court should ever apply. I did not agree with that, and in cases w- where there might be residual doubt. I may write a dissent on that subject, but I don't recall anything recently. My writing where I have dissented has been more directed, in most of the cases that I recall, a dissent, and that there aren't that many dissents that I've written, have been that I don't think this is a death-appropriate case. And one of those occurred down in, I believe, in the Lebanon area, where a guy and his girlfriend went to a bar, got drunk, came home, had a fight, he killed her. Then he took her car keys and drove back to the bar and had a couple more drinks. And the taking of her car keys and driving her car after he murdered her was used to get him to the death penalty. That's the kind of case that I know Joe wouldn't ever prosecute one like that. That should not have been a death penalty case. And so I write in those. Then there was one recently that got a lot of publicity that happened in my hometown, in Bucyrus. I voted to uphold the conviction, Kevin Keith. Kevin Keith managed to create enough of a stir arguing that he wasn't the perpetrator, that Governor Strickland commuted him to life in prison without possibility of parole. I did see that case. I didn't have any doubt, and I still don't. But he got the Innocence Project working. He had great family support, and that's, again, I think the Keith case and what happened there is maybe another exhibit for why we ought to think about whether we should continue the death penalty. Most of these folks that are on death row have no family coming to their aid, aren't likely to get the Innocence Project or any of the really good lawyers that come in on these kinds of things behind them. But Keith did. And eventually he created enough editorial stir. The Beacon Journal really took up his case, and he persuaded the governor that he should not be executed. And Governor Strickland, to his credit, after reading all of this, believed there was some doubt. I didn't think so. He did. And if the governor thought there was some doubt, then he did what he should do, and that's commuted. But generally, in answer to your question, Joe's correct. We're almost all the cases we see are about legal issues and not about whether or not the person charged actually was the perpetrator and the person who caused the death of the person that was the victim.
And that, frankly, is one of the problems with a lot of these studies, that there's innocent people on death row, because many of these groups that are trying to get rid of the statutes nationwide, the term innocence doesn't necessarily mean he didn't do it. It could mean he had a bad lawyer, they didn't do enough preparation, they asked the wrong questions, that kind of thing, that there were procedural things that should have been done that weren't done. That is referred to as an innocent person. And I do want to say one thing. I know we're running low on time, but Paul's mutual friend and mine, Andy Douglas, used to say to me, Justice Douglas used to say, if you spit on the sidewalk in Hamilton County, you're going to get the death penalty. And we totaled up since 1991, the total number of homicides, and then the times that the county went for the death penalty. And since 91, of the total homicides in Cuyahoga County, they sought the death penalty in 30% of their cases. In Franklin County since 91, and I will say this about Ron O'Brien, it's very clear if you look at the statistics, since 2004, they have totally changed the way they're charging death penalty cases. But since 91, Franklin County has sought the death penalty in 19% of all homicides. And since 91, Hamilton County, of all the homicides that have occurred, Hamilton County has sought the death penalty in 6% of those cases. So we are very selective. We don't take a shotgun approach. It's more of a sniper approach. And when we know the case is overwhelming in terms of guilt, and as Justice Pfeiffer noted, the worst of the worst, we will ask a jury for the death penalty. We take that very seriously, and we will not plea bargain those cases unless there's been a change of facts as we knew them going into the grand jury.
Well, Joe Dieters, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
It's Joe Dieters. He's Hamilton County Prosecutor. Also, Ohio Supreme Court Justice Paul Pfeiffer, thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be with you, Ann.
And once again, Andrew Welsh Huggins, legal affairs writer for the Associated Press. Andrew, thanks for joining us again.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
I want to thank Rachel Ramey. She produced this show. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.